Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code Barstool for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Yes,
you want to come and chat with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 123 of season 2. Jeff D. Lowe, Ken Jack, and Gooch coming at you in studio, probably maybe for like the last time. I'm here moving out of New York City, so I was like, fuck it, we'll do it here. And why not? For one of the biggest release weeks of the century? That's not even an exaggeration. Two of the most hyped movies of the year. Definitely of the decade, the young part of the decade, but Barbie and Oppenheimer reviews today. It's an event. I can't even say two. It's an event as one. Together they are an event. The Barbenheimer special. Two absolutely different movies in every way, shape, and form. For many reasons. Seeing them back to back is definitely a fun event, but man, is it. I don't know which one I went Barbie then Oppenheimer. I kind of wish I had flipped them.
Well, that would be Oppen Arby.
It's true. It's not what it's called.
No, it does not rhyme.
It's not what it's called. We have some movie news, and then we will review probably two of the top five, definitely two of the top five movies of the year, maybe one and two in terms of just hype, especially because there's one movie coming out that is probably going to get delayed. Actually,
Don't say probably.
I've already just decided that Dune is getting delayed. And it's not even just Dune. It's going to be other things probably as well. They wouldn't just delay Dune.
Fuck.
But we'll get into Barbie. And
at least we got this.
We did get this. That is true.
I would have sucked if this moved. I mean, what is this? Is this the biggest event at the theater since Endgame? It has to be, right?
Yeah, for sure. Maybe not the biggest release in terms of like the impact. Obviously, Top Gun Maverick, Spider-Man No Way Home. But Spider-Man No Way Home had that weird thing too where it's like, unless you're a big fan, you didn't really know that the Spider-Men were going to be in it. You didn't know Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were going to show up.
Yeah, unless you were following.
And it kind of like snowballed after that and made a shitload of money. For in terms of pre-hype, definitely biggest movie week since Endgame. Because it transcended regular movie-going fans. Like there were people going to these who aren't regular moviegoers.
Also, as far as like movie experience goes, this reminded me of, do you remember when like the dudes were like dressing up in suits to go to Minions? It reminded me of that. Like I went to the theater, everyone was dressed up. It was like an event in its own separate way in that regard too. Not just because it's like, hey, there's two great movies coming out. It's like, this was its own separate entity besides just being a good movie, which is a whole different mark of like cultural relevance.
And I saw it last night. I saw it Monday night. I didn't even see it like the opening night. And I saw people dressed up for both. So I didn't get a chance to see it till Monday evening. And you'd had no idea. It was both theaters packed, just absolutely slammed. We'll get into those in a minute. We'll get into the reviews in a minute. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. This episode brought to you by ZocDoc. I could read the copy, but I've actually used ZocDoc for years.
Amazing app.
Very recently as well. I have a hearing problem. I like can't hear anything.
So does Oppenheimer, to be fair.
I did hear.
You got it.
I did hear them. I did hear that movie though. That was kind of, I was actually very worried. I was like, am I not be able to hear this fucking movie? Kind of hard not to, but ZocDoc, great app or website. If you're using it on desktop, you can find amazing doctors, book appointments online, especially if you're like in a city or in a place that you're not familiar with. Like I just moved. I didn't know where to go. Needed an ENT for my hearing issue. Do you guys have braces?
Yes.
Anyone have that bottom bar in their mouth still?
No, I got bottom and top.
Is it still there?
Yeah.
Apparently you're not supposed to have it there after like a year.
Oh, I've had it
he's like, how long have you had this? I go, 10 years. He goes,
Oh, that should have been out for 10 years. 10 years ago. He's like, it's now moving your teeth in the wrong direction.
Jeez.
Wouldn't have known this if I didn't find someone on ZocDoc. Booking appointments, thousands of top-rated patient review doctors, specialists. You can filter specifically for ones. Take your insurance, too, which is huge. You don't want to show up somewhere and they don't take your insurance. ZocDoc is great. ZocDoc, amazing place to go. Book a doctor. Can be day of, too, for some people. But definitely use ZocDoc, especially, I can't stress enough, you're in an area you don't know if you're moving, or even if, you know, you just want to change, maybe your doctor stinks, you want to change somebody. ZocDoc is the way to go. I've been using it for years. Then you've
long time.
Ken, Jack, and I always sick, as people know. Mm-hmm. we always have some sort of ailment.
It's cool. You all you have to do is like scan your insurance card and they just tell you everyone in your network. It's like amazing.
Right.
Great app.
ZocDoc.com/lights, LIGHTS. App, download the app for free. Book a doctor, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com /lights. All right. Sorry, I don't have my computer, so I'm reading the rundown off my phone. Yeah, well, we'll talk about the delays. Obviously, the writers, actors, everybody strike, possibly going to be delaying movies now, which is really sucks because after COVID, you're like, oh, well, that was a weird thing where they delayed movies. That won't happen again. And then it's just,
a year later.
Yeah, it's like, what the f- – like, I'm just sick of – but I get it. Like, I get it.
This is a significantly more – like, you can understand it more than COVID. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a much more controllable situation. Yeah,
by the studios.
Yeah. Anyway, still sucks no matter what. Dune Part 2 in the lead to get delayed.
Mm.
That's like the one, too. It's like the one that I did not – like. If I could save any movie from this year from getting delayed, it would have been Dune Part 2.
Which the tough thing about Dune getting delayed is the last Dune was delayed as well.
It was. Yeah. That's right.
They've already come out with the two trailers. Like the marketing is like it's in the wind. Like it's happening. So that's like the tough thing of like, oh shit. The hype is going to start really kind of hitting a peak now once Oppenheimer and Barbie fades off into August and everything. Then it's like, all right, the next big kind of release is Dune Part 2. And that getting delayed would be a huge bummer.
Yeah, we were going to get Timothy Chalamet on next week, but they had to, because of the delay and the strike, we weren't allowed to get him. It fucking sucks, but
the whole cast is actually going to sit in.
Yeah. fucking writer strike. Studios got to pay these guys, man.
Yeah, I was going to go on a date with Florence Pugh next week, but she's on strike.
Sucks,
she's like, I got to be on the picket line, babe. Yeah.
What did Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim were picketing that day? They said, like AI is bad. And he says, how about AI? How about A? I think we should get paid more, something like that. It was, really, yeah. It was like, it was the perfect, like Tim and Eric, like they were being very serious, but they're like, God, we gotta do our characters. We can't be normal. Yeah, it would be a huge bummer. There's like really nothing else much more to say. Like I get why they would. Obviously, Dune still has that more of a niche feel than an Oppenheimer mm-hmm. and Barbie. It will need the push. It will need the marketing. It will need the talk show appearances. And if they're on strike, that's just not happening.
Yeah. We need them paid. We need actors to get paid. Just
figure it out. The fuck out.
It was really bad when they showed the total comp for all the CEOs of all the studios. It was embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, that was tough. Tough for the CEOs, man.
And it's like the average pay for an actor was like 20 grand. And it's like Bob Chapek or whatever fucking is getting paid.
Who nobody liked.
Yeah, he's getting paid like $50 trillion and points on the back. Like it's crazy.
Nobody likes Bob Iger right now either, though.
It's true. And for a good reason. What a fucking suicide move he did there. That was insane. I just can't even get into that again.
I mean, Disney at this point might just sell. Bob Iger might just sell the whole company to Apple at this point.
Yeah, you've seen those rumors. The Apple rumors are heating up again.
So that's been a rumor since for years. So when I worked at Disney, that was like the thing. It was like, fuck, are they going to spin off? Well, I worked at ABC, but obviously my paychecks were from Disney. But it was, oh shit, are they going to spin off ABC and ESPN and then sell the rest to Apple? Which obviously, if you get dumped off the side and the rest goes to Apple, it's kind of a bummer. Apple makes complete sense to buy Disney. They own the Pixar brand for a long time. It wouldn't make sense, but like obviously, like that's Iger's mindset. It's like he's extended till 2026. Like let's just get rid of this thing and just sell to Apple.
I wonder if that would get blocked. You know what I mean? Because of the merging of too many studios. You know what I mean? By Congress or whatever.
Is Apple a big enough studio at this point for it to be an issue? That's the only thing.
I don't know, but like as a conglomerate
for sure.
I could see it getting fought, but. Also, Apple would pay with fucking cash, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like just crazy.
Fucking Steve Apple. He's got the bank.
They would just walk up, just drop a couple bags.
Tim Apple coming out, and he's like, "Yeah, get the new iPhone Goofy. Our new brand intertwined."
I don't know. We'll see. But Dune is definitely on the block to get delayed, which would be a huge bummer. We get delayed to 2024, and at that point, like, when do you delay it to 2024? Do you delay it to do you really put it in like January or February? Like, you probably don't. You probably put it for beginning of summer.
Mm-hmm. You think so?
It'd be a hefty delay. They're not going to throw that in.
Although January, a lot more good movies have been coming out in the early, like at least over the last 2 years, a lot more than usual. Which is that it's,
but it's also a movie that they really want to be an Oscar contender too. It's like, I don't know.
I do think studios need to move away from the old idea of like good months, bad months, like, or at least not be so reliant on them. Because you see, Mission Impossible wanted to get into a good month and avoid August.
They got fucked by that.
And if they had just done August, they'd have been fine. There's going to be nothing there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Blue Beetle. Gonna be
Blue Beetle in that fucking bird movie, the duck movie. What the hell?
The duck animated dude. That? When I saw that trailer before Barbie, I was like, what?
I was like, this isn't a real movie. There's another one too. There's a bunch of really bad trailers ahead of Barbie, but
I said it. I said it when I was in the theater.
You had the same ones? It was
I was like, if I hadn't been to the movie theaters in 3 years and like I didn't pay attention to this world and like didn't see trailers, shit like that. If I saw these trailers before the movies, I would think all new movies suck too. I'd be like, Mallard, what the fuck is this?
It was the Mallards and what else? It was, and it was the voice. Ugh.
I mean, the Blue Beetle trailer gets worse with every time.
Blue Beetle's very tough.
And now, I don't know if you guys were early enough in the AMC screening, but like they had a person like introducing Blue Beetle. Like they hired someone to do like one of those Maria Menounos like pre-roll things. And she was like, "Hi, I'm XYZ, and I'm here to introduce Blue Beetle." And she was explaining all the characters of Blue Beetle and why they're so cool.
Oh,
and, like,
that's doing never
a bad job at it because like nobody cares about these characters.
Let me tell you about Ted Kord.
About these dying DC characters. It was just fucking really
to have to explain your comic book property is just not.
Yeah,
it's just not ideal. It's not what you need to be doing.
Jeff, how much do you think Blue Beetle cost to make? I mean, me and Ken Jack looked it up last week.
Yeah,
I feel like it probably cost. They've been making it for a while now. Is it over 100 million?
It is over 100 million.
180 million.
120.
That's still a lot.
Still too much
for a movie that. Crazy. If you have to, if the movie costs 120 million and you have to have somebody come on screen before a movie and explain what it is, that's probably not a good thing.
It's tracking for $30 million right now, so it's not great.
Like opening.
No, like box office overall.
Holy shit.
This is made by the way, the Mallard movie, Migration, made by Benjamin Renner, brother of Jeremy. Kind of a weird little thing.
That he really is?
No. He's some French, guy. Crazy.
The Exorcist trailer played before.
Yeah, it actually looked good. I kind of like that trailer. That's scary.
It's very scary.
On the nose. This is a fucking sequel.
Yeah,
They play the music. They show old characters overlaid with what they used to look like. It's like very, very much like, hey, this is the same shit. David Gordon Green.
Dude, those kids were scary as shit, dude. They scared the shit out of me.
Yeah,
that was a scary ass trailer.
And it's an IMAX too.
I kind of had to look away at some point.
Baby watching. I was kind of like,
it's like, let me check my phone real quick.
So that's. I guess general movie talk. Let's talk about some trailers, some other things.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Invincible Season 2.
They did the Adam Eve special too, which was sick.
Yeah, returns for Part 1 in November, then Part 2 in early 2024. Voice work for Season 3 is complete. The Adam Eve special dropped, a surprise on Prime Video. That's good news because Invincible is awesome.
All right, yeah, I was trying to remember if you watched
it. I watched Invincible.
You did watch The Boys. That was
The Boys. I was behind them by, like, I think, like a week on Invincible, but I did watch all of Invincible.
It's so fucking amazing. Good, man. I've watched it, I think, like 4 times through now because it's been an unseemly gap between seasons. It feels like it's been, like 5 years.
I mean, it's been a long fucking time, it feels like.
Exactly. And this special was, like, a nice holdover, but now I'm just like...
Oh, it was nice, and it was long. And I will say, the animation... Clear step up.
Yeah.
If you could really complain about Invincible Season 1, it had some very iffy animation at times.
It was very, like, 15-minute episode Adult Swim vibes.
Yeah.
Which was like fine. It's a great series. But it definitely was, you're right. Like, I think animation, it could take a leveling up. It is, I feel like we've seen enough about the third season, where that's why I feel like
they just finished the voice work for the third season.
Right. So it's like we've seen enough like random third season notes, where that's why there were times where I'm like, did we see a season two? Like, am I just stupid? But no, it really has been that long.
Yeah, forever. I think they're just trying to like ramp up the production where they can just start churning this shit out, because they're going to do the full story. It's going to take 20 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
They got to start pumping this shit out.
It's like you can't do that much of a gap. Can't do
a four fucking year break on an animated series like that. Especially when you got like competitors like your boy and his fucking pirate ship churning out 1,000 episodes every season.
It's coming to an end. We're in the final arc.
Yeah, you keep fucking, everyone says that.
We're in the final arc.
And that, by the way, every time I see anything for that live action One Piece thing, it just makes me want to puke.
It's the worst thing.
It's awful.
It's the worst thing ever.
The amount of money Netflix has sunk on everything, and the streamers have sunk on everything, it's crazy. It makes me want to puke.
Just it looks like horrific.
Yeah,
which makes me kind of excited to watch it.
I don't know,
especially for you, because you've never seen the anime. Right. It makes it way better.
I'm excited to watch the first episode.
Yeah,
I'm not. It's gonna make me sick to my stomach.
Like, it looks so bad. Speaking of the boys, first show for the boys spinoff series.
Yeah, no more spinoffs. No. People are trying way too fast to spin shit off before it's like really hit enough of a thing.
It can barely support its own universe.
Yeah. No, they had an animated series too for the boys. Yeah. Cut it out.
It does feel like there's a lot. Again, someone who's not watched the boys, partly out of spite. People are so mad I never watched in the first place. I'm watching Suits though.
Get lit up, baby.
Fucking, I refuse to watch. I will never watch because of how many times I've ended a Netflix series or a show, an episode, and they're like, yeah, here's the first pre-roll thing for Suits. Never going to watch.
Stop
putting on the homepage.
I kind of forgot why I didn't like love the whole series.
Mm.
And then I've hit the point where I now remember. I'm like,
It's like season three, right?
Yeah, because it's not like an anthology series. A lot of it is connected, but it's like they do different cases and things in the first, second season. Yeah. And the third season is like just one case. I'm like, oh man, this is kind of fucking boring. I still like it because it's dumb. It's exactly what you expect from like USA, that TNT, USA, that whole universe, like TBS, those types of shows. But like, there are people work watching it. So like we're chatting about it. It's like, that's why I'm rewatching it. And I'm like rewatching it while I do work. It's not like I'm just sitting down every night, like the bowl of popcorn. Yeah, I'm not like, need three more episodes tonight. But anyway, the boys. The spinoff thing is interesting for a lot of things. Obviously, Yellowstone has, what, like 100 spinoffs?
Yellowstone does. Yeah. Fucking The Witcher made 1,000 before they could make one good season.
I just don't, like, see, that's where it's like, chill. Make the one good thing.
Make the one good thing well and very sturdy. And The Boys is probably, out of all these examples you just listed, by far the most sturdy on its own. But still, focus on that. We do not need everything being diluted that quickly just to franchise shit. It's just not necessary.
Explores the lives of hormonal competitive soups as they put their physical, sexual, moral boundaries to the test.
Just focus.
As they put their what? Their physical boundaries to the test?
Put their physical, sexual, moral boundaries.
I thought you slipped in sexual. Why would they add that?
They did.
So this series, just America's based off the trailer.
Only college for young adult superheroes.
It looks like all the complaints that people have about The Boys. Kind of like that's
concentrated into one bit.
Yeah. Yes. Like it just like no subtlety, just kind of crass for the sake of being crass. Like it does not look good. And the effects look terrible.
Real bad.
Really bad.
And like Amazon has the money where like most of their stuff that they sink good money into looks good. Like Lord of the Rings, whatever the fuck you want to say about that gorgeous show to watch. They could have probably waited and just used that money towards The Boys season.
Or just not, don't make this. I don't know who was asking for this. People just want more of The Boys.
Don't make the animated series either, dude.
Like, people don't even like half the characters in The Boys. They just want like Billy Butcher and Homelander.
Exactly. And it's just, this is like an epidemic almost across a lot of different properties in the world. Like once any studio sees like, oh, we have like vague interest in this thing that we're adapting. Like, then they're just, we need to make 500 different things of this and overflow it.
It's kind of crazy they didn't do that with Wick.
Like, one of the Wick, few things. Yeah, and now Wick, they are almost.
Wick has, but even that, like, they took their, like, there's four John Wick movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine to spin off at that point. Like, there is going to be one coming out. Like, there's four John Wick movies.
And it was relatively conclusive, I guess, the fourth one. So, like, you could be like, yeah, now we're done with this, moving on. All these things are still running. And I think by far the worst example of this is The Witcher. Because The Witcher had one okay season, and they're like, we need to make Witch Blood Origin. We need to make the Witch, the Wolf's Wear anime. We need to make this. You do not have any legs to stand on. Why are you doing this?
Imagine them doing like a Covenant spinoff for Halo.
Oh, dude, this reminds me, and I sent this to you guys yesterday, that interview with the casting director for The Witcher and all these other. And
yes.
She was like the casting director for that. And like, by the way, her repertoire was, or like her resume was so bad. It was like Thor the Dark World. Yeah, she did Thor the Dark World and all these other things. But like her whole thing with The Witcher was like, yeah, I cast the character, the main female protagonist in The Witcher. It's like, I casted her as a half Indian woman because I wanted people to realize that non-white women could be beautiful too. It's like, what the fuck?
It's like, what
a disgusting way to approach casting a movie. Like thinking like you're showing the world that non-white like
you're,
people
you're the one pretty. Breaking that barrier.
Yeah. It was so fucking gross, dude. And man, The Witcher is just, it's rough. It's in rough shape.
Yeah, the Yellowstone spinoff thing kind of cracks me up too, though, because there are so many.
There's 1928. There's
so many.
It's like, I just imagine whoever the CEO of Paramount is just keeps Taylor Sheridan locked in.
Dude, that new series. What the fuck? Yeah. When did that come from?
Lioness.
Dude, I was watching a new series. That's right. It's out.
Yeah, it's literally out. I was on to Paramount to go watch something else, and I saw it on the homepage. I was like, what the fuck is this?
I came home Saturday night and I was watching Interstellar, and then they played that trailer, and I was like, what the fuck is this? They're like, from Taylor Sheridan, starring Zoe Saldana
and Morgan
Nicole
Freeman.
Kidman. Morgan Freeman.
Is it good? Like, do people like it?
I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes before. I was like, oh, maybe I'll try it. And it's like sitting at a 30, and I'm just like,
Taylor Sheridan needs to attach his stuff to good directors.
Yeah. And also just,
that's,
or maybe just pull back a little bit.
Exactly.
I love Taylor Sheridan's work, but there's been a lot of things that have not been great.
Yeah. And maybe just focus on one thing like TV, or just focus on movies. You know what I mean?
Preferably movies.
Yeah. Preferably movies, and making sure that you get the right directors to do those. Cause there are a lot of good emerging people that his scripts would be great with. But like, it's just, you only see 1923. We don't need to see, what was it, Trespass Against Us.
1883 was another one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wait, did you just say the fire movie?
What was the fire? Was it Trespass Against Us?
No.
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Yep. It's like, you don't need that. Focus on one thing, because you're such a great screenwriter.
For Angelina Jolie played a firefighter in the middle of Montana.
Solving a murder mystery.
Did that casting director work on that one too?
Yeah, very possible, dude.
You want people to know that people like Angelina Jolie can be firefighters.
That's an ultimate, and we'll talk about this in Oppenheimer too. One of the great actresses, I was like, I want her back. I want her back in doing shit. And it's just, that was maybe not the right one.
Yeah.
Pretty cool anime. It seems like people really like this.
Oh, yeah.
Great vibes. Holy shit.
This got a massive pop. As big of a pop for an anime
Future
trailer.
Watanabe is releasing a new anime called Lazarus, directed by Watanabe with Chad Stahelski on board as action director, who obviously Chad Stahelski being of John Wick. He directed the John Wick movies. He's one of the legendary stunt guys in Hollywood. So that is a pretty cool fucking thing to do in that. I didn't really get to see the reaction, but I saw the trailer and I was like, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's as big of a pop for an anime trailer as I've seen since we've ever posted. I mean, outside of maybe like the stuff for Attack on Titan, which obviously has a huge fan base already, that people were going nuts over that. I mean, it just looks so smooth. It looked like Cowboy Bebop. It looked like Spike.
It looked like Samurai Champloo. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like all these things all just kind of mixed into that with that same, that new soundtrack on it was unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's going to be made for an American audience, which is interesting. Like, it's being made by Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm. We have some of that, but like, that is like, we don't see a ton of it. And that is very interesting.
Rick and Morty also getting an anime. So I guess these studios have like, they're like, I guess the weebs, there's a lot of weebs out
there.
They
realized it.
Because I mean, that are really good. Lord of the Rings is making one.
The Rohan one. Yeah. The writers were here.
I mean, you talk about Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan has
loves anime.
Yeah.
Influenced by anime. Dead Reckoning had anime influences. You pointed out
Inception was like modeled partially off of Paprika, right? Like that.
Yeah,
was
people say it's like almost like lifted
shot for shot in points. But he's also one of the very few directors that I believe credits him.
Yes,
like Aronofsky was like, yeah, I made this show. Like when I forget what he ripped, but he just
not entirely shocking from old Darren.
Yeah. Darren's next movie is just a fucking Gundam.
Like, I fucking love mechs. No one was doing this. the cyberpunk anime that they did on Netflix was awesome.
Yeah,
like, they have a good space there. Like, you want to like not have to or get good return, right? Mm-hmm. That's their big thing. They're sinking $1 trillion in a live action One Piece. sink that same amount of money in different animes, and at least one of them is going to hit.
Imagine the money they could have spent and how much they could have made anime-wise if they just sunk the live-action anime like into like five different things.
Yeah, like the live-action fucking Cowboy Bebop. Like, sink that money elsewhere. So it would have been like into 20 different animes, and you'd be way better off.
The Cowboy Bebop being the anime, but just like extended in every scene, is one of the worst decisions I've ever seen in like the last 10 years for a property.
The director of that just had no fucking clue what made Cowboy Bebop good. So that was the biggest problem.
So this is good. What if we just like, you know, make it a little longer?
Yeah.
Why don't we add a couple lines of dialogue here and there? Why don't we take the good thing and just kind of make it look a little shittier?
The guy who did, what was the villain's name in Cowboy Bebop? I'm blanking on it. Yeah, no, I feel like an idiot for losing his name right now. But whoever wrote the lines for him just had a fundamental misunderstanding of what made him a good villain. It was just insane. But there's just like, there's so many good spaces out there to adapt shit and make cool anime. And like, I think one of the things, and I don't know if you'd agree with me, Gooch, is like in the anime space, one of the things people are looking for best is just really well produced and like and well animated.
Yeah. Oh, you know yeah. I mean?
Like, that's one of the biggest asks, and not many studios can do it because they can't afford to, like, hey, let's throw a hand drawn thing in here instead of a shit pumped out CGI bullshit thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a huge ask for that, and you want to spend that money on whatever bullshit you're wasting it on and live action and use it there. People would be like, anime fans especially, and that's a huge fucking section of people would gravitate towards that so fast.
Yeah. I've been watching, by the way,
for live action One Piece.
The Superman animated series is good. Mm. I'm ready to say it's good. Four episodes in, very good. Oh, that Futurama, was a cool decision.
Futurama episode one of the new season dropped on Hulu. It's pretty
good.
Pretty solid.
I didn't watch anything. Last week. Like,
Gemstones is good.
I was traveling. I do need to watch Gemstones. I was traveling, so it's been kind of tough to keep up. But
hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Fucking suits.
I don't know anything about the show other than I would see commercials for it when I was watching the shows I liked on like USA or whatever network it was. And then everyone that would tell me about it, I'd be like, yeah, basically every episode is like, oh, we have XYZ problem. And then the smart ass guy would be like, actually, I knew about that the whole time.
Yeah.
And like, that's basically every episode.
That is pretty spot on.
And I talked about this when we talked about Suits, I think the other day. I just, one of the biggest reasons I never watched it is I think those two main characters look way too similar.
Like, they
I
are.
Just look he's at them like, and I'm like, I don't
Mike
like that.
He's kind of a protege to Harvey Specter, the older guy.
Yeah.
A lot of people are. It's kind of.
That's not a blue collar crime name. No, fuck that. That's a spy name.
It's kind of like, but it's also Meghan Markle's character's name is Rachel Zane.
Rachel Zane.
But like, it's
shut
also,
the fuck up.
It's also like kind of quietly like, it's not porn, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's sort
porn
of.
Porn vibe.
There's some lingering shots on Rachel Zane, if that's what you're talking about.
Is there like softcore vibes to it?
It's like G-rated like softcore vibes sometimes, where it's like, it's a horny show. And I think that's a big reason why some people watch it. There's a lot of hot people in that show, dudes and women. And so I think that's a big, like, it's not even like a secret reason, but it's definitely a reason why it's very popular on Netflix right now. It's not like, it was a bunch of like dumpy, ugly people. Like, I don't think it would be very popular right now.
What was the name of the character, their Ari Gold guy? You know what I mean?
Well, they have
Louis LaTrust or something.
Louis Litt.
Louis Litt.
That did the fucking Royal Match commercials or whatever.
Yes, yes. What's his name? It's like Rich Hoffman.
It's something like that, yeah.
Royal Match, yeah.
Come check out Royal Louis Match, Litt. Guys.
That's a guy I would have expected to show. Like, there was a point in Oppenheimer where I was like, Louis Litt might show up at some point.
Yeah. There's a couple, and we'll talk about it. There's a couple people either forgot weren't in it or didn't, like Tony Goldwyn is in it.
Krumholtz is the one that he used.
Yeah, Krumholtz. Yeah, Krumholtz showed up nowhere and knocked it out.
Yeah, there are some people who you're just like, holy shit, they're in this movie.
Yeah.
Even like Dane DeHaan, I forgot was in. He's a massive part of the movie.
It's incredible.
Yeah. People just show up.
How many interviews did we have on that cast? Because we had Jason Clark, we had Dane DeHaan, we had, I think, a couple more too. We had fucking
Jason
Hartnett. We had
Jason Clark.
Clark. Hartnett,
Dane DeHaan.
I think we have more too.
Safdie Brothers.
Safdie Brothers. Ooh, we're cooking, Mark. We do a lot in that movie. There's another one too.
Gooch almost went on a date with Florence Pugh.
That's true. Yes. That counts.
That does count.
Dalmastic and Robbie did, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
Tom Conti, I had lunch with him the other day. He was pretty cool. Who else we got?
Why didn't you stick out your tongue, Tom? Why didn't you do the thing?
Jack Quaid, did we do Jack? No, we did Dennis Quaid. I think we almost did Jack
That
Quaid.
Kind of counts.
Alex Wolff, we did.
We did?
Or did we do his brother? I don't remember.
No, we did do. We did do him. We did not do the brother. Nat, right?
Yeah, Gary.
No, Nat was in like the Sick Playlist movie. What's that called?
I don't know.
Naked Brothers Band, do something. I don't know
what movie. What movie was Nat Wolff in? It was like a movie with
Paper Towns
with Cara Delevingne. Yeah, Paper Towns. Right?
Paper Town. Holy shit! What a pull!
I kind of like that.
What a pull! What's the Sick Playlist movie? Oh, Nick and Nora's Infinite. That's like Michael Cera.
Yeah, that's Michael Cera with Kat Dennings, right?
Did we ever do Matt Modine?
We did some people in Barbie too. We did. Like, yeah,
It's fucking.
I had a bunch of people. All right, so let's talk about. We'll start with Barbie. No interview today. By the way, that's very impacted by we can't interview anybody.
Yeah, well, all our interviews are going to cancel, like Chalamet. And all
yeah. We had a really good draft with someone, and I can't say.
Yeah, that's right.
We're gonna do a tier ranking of just
Timothy Chalamet.
So let's see.
Did we do this guy? Am I crazy? This dude from, I don't know, we're in our tribe, so that's the name from like Army of the Dead and shit. He's a Zack Snyder guy.
I think we might have
Matthias Schweighöfer. That's a tough one. Sorry, man.
Who did he play?
He was the Nazi Heisenberg.
He played Heisenberg, right? Yeah.
You imagine all which that's going to be on TikTok things,
which so. I guess I didn't realize that even they mentioned Heisenberg, I was like, oh fuck, like the Heisenberg, like
from
Walt
Breaking Bad. Yeah,
there is one I don't want to skip ahead to
say my name.
I'll say it now because there is a very funny funny line. It's not subtle. It's over. I kind of wish he wouldn't have said it. Doesn't impact my score of the movie at
all. Heisenberg or
no?
In Oppenheimer.
Are you going to talk about the one that I texted in the group immediately? Yeah. And I was like, we need to mention this.
Wait, which one? Well, spoiler for
involves
the young senator from Massachusetts. Yeah.
Okay. It is. That's why I texted that to the group. Like, I'm okay. The second
right.
I
you
left.
Say that's right. There is like.
There's a couple of those.
Spoiler for Oppenheimer. So I do mention John F. Kennedy
in the least subtle way.
My theater laughed.
My theater laughed. Well, my theater kind of gave like a like they were going to start. There's a really funny. There's a very funny fake post credit scene for Oppenheimer.
As the Einstein one was very good. Really amazing. Funny. Well done.
But that's kind of what it felt like with Kennedy too. Is like the young senator from Boston.
It's
from
like you cut it there. Stop right there.
We know who it is.
You didn't even need to say that. Just like some young kid from Massachusetts. Like he's like some young upstart.
Yeah, thing. Something like John F. Kennedy. Yeah. Which is actually, by the way, Aaron Reich could play a Kennedy. I feel like.
I mean, I played him. In Times Square, and I am a Kennedy, so I think it all transitive property works out.
I could see him playing like a young, like Bobby Kennedy. Like I could see him playing. I mean,
Jason Clark played a Kennedy.
Yeah,
played Ted Kennedy in Chappaquiddick.
That's right. But that I did. That was really there were some like historical biopic universe vibes, and like some like the reveals.
Not as egregious as like the end of The King's Man with Hitler showing up, at the end of it,
or the end of The Post when they show him unlocking they show him with the tape on the door at Watergate. Yeah, whole audience. Holy shit! All the president's
like,
men.
Literally, like Marvel, like post credit collapse is so funny.
Also because we're talking about it too, and I don't. This is not like whatever because I don't want to make this part of like the actual breakdown of the movie, but Einstein showing up got a big laugh from the audience, which like I think what it is that there's just not a lot of Einstein content.
No,
very little.
No,
it's always it's that tertiary. One poster. Like it's like what's the? It's like that one poster with like a motivational quote.
Yeah, and there's always fake ones too.
Or cartoons.
Yes, be like cartoons. Yeah, like there'll be like a cartoon character that's supposed to be Einstein but isn't actually Einstein or will be Einstein.
And you look him up, like when you look up pictures of Einstein, he really is that goofy look. He's a goofy looking dude.
Yeah.
It's always weird because our reference for him as a kid is never seeing him specifically. It's seeing people like characters inspired by him, given the same hair, given this, and it's people referencing him.
Transformers
like,
character.
Yeah, like good job, Einstein. Like people will say shit like that and sarcastic. We very rarely just see him. And so I guess it is a little, it's understandable to a degree.
Because he played it really well. Yeah. It looked good. It looks accurate. It just, it's a goofy, and to be fair, his intro is like his hat flying off, which is always a very funny thing to see happen to somebody.
It's a grumpy face. He's like,
yeah. Who?
I was waiting for him to let out a humph.
It's going to ignite the atmosphere.
It was just funny to look at.
This episode brought to you by Factor. We're in the thick of summer. You might want some easy, convenient meal, especially like, you know, you go away on the weekend or maybe you're going out on the weekend. You don't want to come home and, you know, do a big meal prep maybe for the week and all that. Factor, great. A lot of the big YouTube chefs I watch, they like Factor. I saw a guy test Factor meals against buying from the store and said it was absolutely worth the money and worth the price.
They're incredible.
That wasn't even sponsored. This is, though, by Factor. Maybe you're too busy with summer plans and stuff. You want to cook, have stuff for the week, for the weekend, for those Sunday nights when you're home. You know, you're feeling like, shit, I got to get back to work. Don't want to cook. But I also don't want to order, especially like in New York, spend $60 on like one burger and fries because of delivery fees.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I would say that's a relatable thing for all cities, but I really do think New York is just the king at the worst delivery fees possible. Yeah.
Now, you'll pay for like 2 8-ounce smash patties on a butter roll with some fancy spicy mayo, and they'll charge you $22 for it before the fries. You're just like, what the fuck?
Before everything,
it's delicious, but I'm like, what the hell?
That's probably even before the delivery fee and tip on top of that too. The delivery fee doesn't go to them.
Any fast food place, honestly, going in store, it's not cheap either. Any fast food place commercial should have a disclaimer at the bottom, like, does not apply in New York City.
Yeah.
Rest assured with Factor, you get sustainable choices for food. 100% of their delivery, they offset 100% of their delivery emissions. 100% renewable energy, too, with all their production sites and all that. So you're not just getting good food. The quality and the production that goes into it is fantastic. Skip that trip to the grocery store, maybe prep and chop and make your life simple and easy with eating. And again, fresh, never frozen, under 2 minutes. That's the way to go if you're looking for a more convenient way to eat. Head to Factor, F-A-C-T-O-R, meals.com/LCB50. Get 50% off. Use code LCB50. Code LCB50 at factormeals.com/LCB50. Get 50% off. Really good meals. People love them, and for good reasons. We do, too. All right. Synopsis for Barbie. We'll start with Barbie. Barbie and Ken are having the time of their lives in the colorful and seemingly perfect world of Barbie Land. However, when they get a chance to go to the real world, they soon discover the joys and perils of living among humans, which impacts their lives back in Barbie Land. Star-studded cast. Both these casts are just unbelievable. Obviously led by Margot Robbie as Barbie and Ryan Gosling as Ken, directed by Greta Gerwig, who has done a slew of just fantastic movies over the last couple of years and has really established herself as probably the, correct me if I'm wrong, number one female director in Hollywood.
Qualitatively, I would say yes.
Yeah. Like, I think
people are going to try to say fucking Jane Campion or whatever, but no, it's easily Greta.
Lady Bird is just, I love Lady Bird. I don't love Little Women, but I think I'm not the wrong, but I think I'm maybe in like more of the minority there. I like it. I think it's a really good movie, but I don't love it, but it's still really good.
I would go a step further and even say she's like one of the premier millennial directors, like from that generation. Right. Like, I think she's top three, like in terms of pull and like
written by,
you know, they crush it down.
Oh yeah.
They get down.
Written by her and her partner, Noah Baumbach, who also himself has done a ton of great stuff.
This Marriage Story, all this shit. They do shit everything together now.
Yeah, recently, must be Marriage Story was a big one. But yeah, they do collab now.
Yeah.
Cast, though, other than Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie, Kate McKinnon.
Went measured performance.
Yes.
I got to say, they did a good job not letting
who
that go
she
too
was
far.
Roommates with in college. Interestingly.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Greta and Kate McKinnon were.
Issa Rae, Alexandra Shipp. I don't want to read a ton of names if it's like people who like you wouldn't know. Simu Liu.
He's looking at like Dua Lipa. He's like, yeah, you guys don't know her.
One of the Kens. There's a couple other Kens. I just don't want to say if it's like a surprise. Michael Cera is in it. We interviewed Michael Cera recently.
Way bigger role than I expected it to be. Yes. Which is good in a great way.
By the way, talk about like a deep dive on the toy after. Very funny toy.
So fucking funny.
Hilarious toy. America Ferrera. We know Will Ferrell's in it.
Yeah.
America Ferrera's role pretty huge.
Mm-hmm. It's like the anchor, kind of.
This movie's made an ass load of money. It's made $356 million of a $145 million budget. It's going to be one of the biggest movies of the year. It'll probably reach a billion. I would assume it's going to reach $1 billion.
Yeah, I think this is going to stick in theaters for a while.
Yeah. Biggest domestic opening of 2023. Biggest opening ever for a female director. Biggest opening for a movie based on a toy. Biggest opening ever for Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, which is an interesting note because they are not Marvel stars, which is hard these days for stars to the level of Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling for them to say it's their biggest opening.
Yeah.
Because like so many are in Marvel movies where it's like that just is like Bradley Cooper will never have a movie ever again that has the biggest opening because he was in Avengers.
Yeah. Right?
So it's kind of funny to see two massive stars who are not in Marvel movies who get that pub. Biggest opening weekend for a movie that isn't a sequel, remake, or superhero movie.
I thought that was the most interesting one.
That is very interesting. For sure. It is an event. People are dressing up. It is absolutely a movie that is catered to women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't even mean that in a negative way. It is a, you know, for as much as like people say like a dude's rock movie, it's definitely like a women rock movie as well. But we'll note there's definitely some people who, and we don't have to get crazy into the discourse, but like, I don't think it's as much of a negative on men movie as people want to make it seem.
If that's your takeaway, I think from the movie, I think you just have like, and this is partially due, and we talked about this too, like off camera, but like you get poisoned and weathered by social media to the point where you can't read past surface level of like anything where it's like a satire or a comedy or something like that. And like that really hurts your ability to enjoy things. And I think if that's your takeaway, that you've fallen victim to that.
Yeah. Just like, I don't really totally get. I mean, I get it.
It's making fun of men. It's like that happens in every other like world in media. You know what I mean?
But it's also like in a funny at times dudes rock way as well, though. And they even say like it still wraps up in a very like, I don't know. It's not weird because like what else do you expect? Fucking social discourse. There's discourse on everything these days.
Discourse on fucking Oppenheimer.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no Japanese people in Oppenheimer. Like there's everywhere you go. There's somewhere something about something.
Interesting. So let me read some reviews from our coworkers. this is Barbie. Should I tie their names to it?
I think no, and let people guess.
Barbie's to women what Fight Club and The Matrix are to men. I think you can make some funny comps like what Barbie is for men. I wouldn't pick those two. I got to make a video about this. People with pink all over the place, grown adults at that, Barbie shirts everywhere, little boys dressing like Ken. What the fuck is going on?
Jesus.
Barbie is a 0 out of 10 if you don't have any Barbie nostalgia and you don't like camp, aka over the top bad shit. Which I did talk to this person about the movie because I agree on some of the takes of that what that person said, but I don't agree on the overall part. But I got to disagree with him on camp. That's not what camp is. Camp can be great.
If you give this movie a 0 out of 10, you're just not critically.
You've never watched the movie.
I laugh, sob throughout every minute of Barbie. 20 out of 20. Holy shit, I can't wait to go see it again.
Why 20?
The more I talk about it, the worse I think Barbie was. By the end of the weekend, I'm going to be raiding a Toys R Us and lighting dolls on fire, which is definitely the most exaggerated one out of that group because I went to Oppenheimer with that person last night, and we kind of had the same opinion, but I just think there's a level of like...
That was Frank the Tank.
Of how you talk about it on social or in videos where it seems maybe more exaggerated than the other. I like Barbie. I don't know. Like I don't think it's transcendent in any way, but I also think there's this very weird thing that's going on with it where people are surprised it's not subtle. And I'm like, what the fuck did you expect? Of course it's like it's not a subtle movie. Like the message and what they're saying is very clear. Like there's a literal, and I guess this is not a spoiler, but there is a speech, there's a monologue. Like there is like they tell you the point. It is, to me, what Pixar is. It's made for kids and it's made for adults. It's made for both people who are older and who can accept it on a maybe deeper level and for kids who are maybe getting the message but in an easier way. It's a Barbie movie. It's a movie based on the fucking kid's toy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even think you need nostalgia for it. Like, I think... Like
no,
like my sister had Barbies, but like she didn't play with Barbies all the time. Like
I never played with Barbie. I went home and Googled half the shit they were talking about because it was fucking interesting.
But like I think it's
these like remake or old toys and shit, you know.
And I think there's also this thing where people are kind of crapping on it because like they heard the script was insane. By the way, how bad was fucking Amy Schumer's script? By the way, what the fuck must that have been?
I really want to see it. I want to see more than anything.
I will say that was like the one thing that I, in terms of like talking about the script being deep or whatever, I did think that. Like maybe the script would have been a little more subtle, just be based on that what they said about Amy Schumer's script.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck was Amy Schumer's? Because this was a pretty light and fun movie. Like, what the fuck did she write?
She also wanted to star in it, if I remember correctly.
True. Okay. I don't know. I like the camp. I don't think it's perfect by any means. I think it's fun. I think it's bright and colorful. I think it gets the point across in a really nice way. I don't know. Like, I think Margot Robbie's really solid. I think Ryan Gosling's great. I don't think it's great by any means. I think it's a good movie. I think it's a good movie. It's
very brave of you.
Gave it an 83 out of 100. I wish I had seen this movie a week ago because I have nothing interesting.
Barbie's not going to fuck you, Jeff.
I have nothing interesting to say about this movie in the discourse sense. Like, I don't have any – like, I couldn't sit here and pretend to come up with a strong opinion on this movie.
Mm.
It's an 83 out of 100. I enjoyed the movie. I get why people who really love it, and I don't fully get why some people who are hating on it hate it.
Yeah, I landed on 84. Like, I think I'm going to be probably way, I'm going to be way lower than Jeff was. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah. Doesn't reinvent the wheel. Doesn't do anything like absolutely incredible. I think the biggest thing I'd want to focus on as far as a pro of this movie is just how fucking funny it was. You know what I mean? Like, this is a movie, like, you go into it and you expect it. Like, when you see all the press tour stuff, like Gosling talking about Kennergy and all this shit, like, you're like, this is going to be funny. I really hope it really lives up to that hype. They definitely lived up to that. There's so many lines in this movie which were like laugh out loud funny. Like, we were talking about some before, like the fascist Barbie line being just,
it's like, I'm not a fascist. I don't control the commerce of the railways.
Like, it's just, that part's hysterical. Everything with Ken, like the horses obsession.
Oh my
gosh. So fucking funny. And like, even that, like they're doing this again, like in a campy sense, but like I'm watching this and I'm seeing him go and like set up this fucking house and come out of the Hummer, and I'm like, fuck yeah, this is awesome. Like, I'm
falling right into it. The review that was 20 out of 20 was our coworker Kelly Keeks, who loves it. Yeah. She actually, when I asked, because I hadn't seen it, and I asked, and she said, she was, it kind of makes me mad because Ryan Gosling steals the show. He is really fucking good in it.
But that's because he's like the goofier of the two. You know what right. I mean? Like, she's more of like a, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but like, she's the conductor of the train here. But he's just so fucking funny. And like, the way that they design a lot of this set, like the production of this, I thought was awesome. Like, seeing like the real look of like a Barbie house, and like the fact that when they're on the beach, it's like plastic looking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all fake looking, and then getting into the real world, that being all regular. That was awesome. The dance sequence I thought was A++.
Oh yeah.
So goddamn good. Like, that whole like little bit, the Jets versus Sharks bit.
Yes. Just
hysterical. All the supporting characters along the way, I thought very, very funny. The only thing I think that detracts from this movie is that it's definitely messy. Like, it gets all over the place. The points could have been streamlined, maybe a little bit better, and like been a little bit of a smoother ride. And as far as like the, like, again, can't be in your, it's supposed to be in your face. There is definitely a line you got to toe to a degree to make it a more successful movie. And it wavers on each side for sure. No question about it. But in the end, like, I watched the movie, I'm cracking up. Theater's cracking up, having a fucking blast, laughing at everything. And you know what's another great joke I just remembered? The scene where she's like, Margot Robbie's like crying and she's like, I'm so ugly or something like that. And it's like, stops and it's like, director's note, don't cast Margot Robbie for this part if that's the point you want. Like, there's so many lines like that.
I think your point you texted us, I think, is maybe why my biggest critique is you said it gets a little lost in the sauce at points.
Yeah, that's
it gets a little lost within its own, like, because it's the, like, the message and stuff. I don't even, like, whatever. Yeah, I guess it hits you across that, but I don't think it, I'm glad it wasn't subtle, because I don't think it should be subtle for this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it should be pretty straightforward, but I think in terms of like the style of like going in the real world and out of the real, like all that, like, I do think that gets to be
a little messy.
It's not like nuanced. It's not perfect. And I think that's where it kind of, like you said, like it gets a little lost in itself.
Yeah. And that's, I think the biggest detraction I can think of for this entire movie, because like everything else, like, I'm dying laughing. I think the acting was great across the board. Margot Robbie hit some like actually emotional notes through the movie, which are pretty well done.
I have a take that I've seen the Ryan Gosling Oscar campaign already started.
No,
it's Margot Robbie, right?
Yeah, no,
she was the performance of the movie.
Ken's like a dancing bear.
Oh yeah, she's
like,
still great. Right? Yeah.
I loved Ryan Gosling's performance; very funny. But Margot Robbie was legitimately like had emotional range and was great throughout. Yeah. Like, I think she should pick up a nom by the end of the year.
Exactly. And yeah, I think that their anchors in this, like, you're like America Ferrera, I thought was really well, like, just kind of put in there to give you like a more grounded sense of reality. This is an absurdist movie. You know what I mean? And like,
yeah, it is. Absurdist is a great word to use.
And like, she still gives you like a little bit of grounded reality. And even though like she immediately just folds into, oh yeah, obviously Barbie Land exists and we got to go there. Like, yeah, it's still like you feel a little bit more grounded in that into that world. Will Ferrell, very funny also. And also like, what's her name? Danny DeVito's Rhea oh my god, of Ruth in the movie, the old
Rhea Perlman.
Rhea Perlman, yeah, she was, I thought, really well, really good in this movie as well. Just overall, really fucking fun time. Like in that theater, everyone's dying laughing.
Right.
Everyone's having a fun time. It's super, super, at the end of the day, entertaining, which is, I think, the ultimate goal of this movie. And that's something that gets lost too, I think, in whatever discourse, is like people think this movie was designed to deliver a message. That's not what it is. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
It is entertaining. That is the goal of this movie. And almost every movie that's ever existed is to entertain you. And that is a goal that is achieved in this movie.
I think the people that wrote Marriage Story and wrote Lady Bird, I think they're very capable of writing a movie that is not, that is very subtle.
Yeah.
That is subtle, that is very deep, or maybe
you think.
Makes you think about, you know, feminism or women in a way that you wouldn't. But I don't, I think very clearly they were trying to not do that. And like, I don't, I guess my big issue with their, with the, I guess, critique of it not being crazy deep, being like, it's so obvious in your face, is that I don't think that's a fair criticism of the movie. Like, just because you thought that going in, and ironically, we'll talk about that same type of thing with Oppenheimer, thinking it was, why is it not an action movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, okay, like, I think you can be, I think you can maybe go and be like, ah, oh, I thought that was gonna be this, but like, I don't think it's a fair reason to say, like, I think it stinks because of that. Like, no, I think they very clearly were trying to make, it's actually funny, I rated Godzilla in 80, Godzilla vs. Kong in 83 out of 100 as well, kind of a dude's rock movie, but Godzilla vs. Kong, like, I think because you don't make it crazy deep, you make it campy and over the top ridiculous, I think maybe you limit the movie being potentially like great and transcendent, but like you deliver what I think audiences want to see and what your audience wants to hear and wants to feel and wants to see. I think that's what they succeeded here with. That's like, yeah. Godzilla or a movie like that.
Primary goal.
I think had they maybe tried to make it this Oscar, oh, you know, crazy deep.
It fucking sucked.
I think, could it have been maybe good? Yeah. But I think it much more likely could have been a complete pile of dog shit.
And no one would see it.
Right. And I think that's where like I'm kind of, I guess I'm not confused by it. We talk movies all the time. We review them all the time. And we see the same takes. It's just one of those things. Like, I just don't think it's a very fair critique of the movie.
The primary goal, and I think it's like indisputable, primary goal of this movie was to entertain audiences, like without a doubt. Like, you want to say, hey, it has a little secondary goal. Maybe it wants to tell you more about women's struggles in the world, whatever. Sure. But the primary goal, which is the biggest part of this entire fucking movie, is to make you laugh and feel entertained. And that it succeeds.
Do you think if Anchorman came out today, there'd be someone like, there'd be like a contingent of people like, God, this fucking movie is trying to tell me about women in the workplace. Fuck this.
Yeah, exactly.
It probably would be.
Which is, it's a movie that I thought of because I was like, they clearly grew up on the same comedies exactly. that I grew up on. Because there was like major Adam McKay, like Talladega Nights.
For sure.
Anchorman vibes, like especially like just, I felt a lot of Anchorman where it just breaks out into like an entire bit, like especially the dance scene. Like mm-hmm. I was like, this is throwback comedy to what I grew up on. Mm-hmm. I liked it more than you all. I'm at a 90 out of 100. I loved it. It clearly has issues. Biggest one for me being America Ferrera's monologue was poorly written.
Yeah.
Maybe not poorly written, but poorly written compared to what I know they're capable of.
Apparently it took them like 4 weeks to film. Like they did like a trillion takes. And that feels like you could have had a better take.
It was very cliche and a little drawn out. But outside of that,
that's the thing that I do get though. Like I kind of get why it would take so long to nail that because you're not trying to do. And I've seen some people who are on like the positive side maybe take offense to the idea that you call it a movie for kids, but like I don't think that's an offense. Like I think it is meant like it. I think that's a reason to champion it more. Like it's meant for all generations. So I kind of get why maybe it didn't land perfect, but I get why like it might have taken a while to figure out the right angle of like, hey, this is for older women. This is also for younger women as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw people saying it was radically feminine. I'm like, this is not radical feminine. This is surface level men and women should be equal.
Yeah.
Feminism.
Go watch. What was the movie that came out last year? The New York Men? Times movie?
No.
Oh, no. The one with, God damn it.
She said.
Yeah.
She's like that. I mean, like, yeah. There's if you want a radical feminism movie, there's a lot more options.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where it's like, we're talking about people giving this like a 0 out of 100. Like, you just haven't seen enough movies. If you think this is radically feminist, you have not seen a radically feminist movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those exist. They're out there. And that this is not what it is at all.
Yeah, but back to, I mean, this movie is like, it has, like, it's not going to win Best Picture. But it's so fun. The world that they built, the sets they built, just immediately draw you in. Yeah. Like, immediately, right off the bat. The bits that they do from the Stanley Kubrick reference to kick it off to, like, the depressed Barbie commercial. Like, such great bits. Like, studio comedies are, I think, coming back. I think we're getting there. And this was a great step in the right direction. I mean, I just had a great time at the theater. I really did.
Right.
Like I really loved it. And this is a movie I rewatched it yesterday, maybe a little illegally, just because I immediately wanted to rewatch it.
I like Pirate
it.
Party.
That's accepted now, though.
Yeah.
If you watch it once, pay for it, and then.
Remember, there were some directors who were like tweeting out the link to watch
it. Oh, Al Yankovic.
That was Weird Al.
Yeah.
I think that's because it was on Roku.
Yeah.
No, but we read other examples of recent directors who were like, hey, you can't see my horror, like, go watch it here. Again, my thing is too, is like, It's bright, it's colorful, it's just fucking fun. It's a fun movie. And maybe at the expense of it being like, again, greater and grander, but I think they made a great decision to not try and make it something that it shouldn't be.
It's
to try and take it to a level that, like, you could try to climb the Everest mountain and make it an Oscar winner, but I think that completely does a disservice to what it is. And it's a movie about a toy, but it's a movie about a very important toy for, you know, for women, for girls, and I think they made the right call on how they
made. We already made a G.I. Joe movie and it wasn't very good. No. Neither of them.
Right. That's a great fucking that's a literal one for one example. Is if the G.I. Joe movie had just been this campy, and it like it was campy in spots, but like if it had just embraced really what G.I. Joe is, like G.I. Joe could have been fucking awesome, but they tried to make it so serious and make it so real life, and it's ironic. Well,
we're getting another one.
Yeah, we sure are.
Because of the Transformers in credit.
By the way, that's something that I think this movie did well too, is towing the brand safety line for Mattel.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's one where it's like, this turns into too much brand propaganda, then it really, like, you get lost and you hate this movie.
Right, like,
really
did a good job. Like, Alan, like, the Michael Flickers, like, literally made, which, go down the rabbit hole on the toy Alan, Ken's best friend. Yeah. Very funny.
Gay
I don't know how we've never talked. Yeah. I'm surprised that we've never found that out. Like, we don't talk about Barbie on this show.
I
much,
had no
like,
fucking clue about
that. That feels like a thing that we would have dug up like in our first year doing this show. Yeah. It's like Canada best friend him to Alan.
Or like the inflatable boob Barbie. That seems like one we'd definitely figure out.
That one, the sugar daddy.
Sugar daddy one, yeah.
Sugar daddy Barbie. Very funny. Sugar daddy Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that, by the way? That was Hugh Grant.
Actor. No. It's he does like the voice in his, like, he can talk with his mouth closed thing. Not ventriloquism. It's a different
Jeff Dunham voice.
No. He's a British actor. He does that show with Steve Coogan, the traveling one. Fucking God damn it. I forget his name. It's like some English shit. I don't know. But he's really good. But yeah, I think this is a great example of a movie that just maybe will be misunderstood, maybe will be misunderstood forever by general audiences that won't go see it because they think it's like a propaganda movie or whatever, which I saw your Florence Pugh propaganda joke. Very funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's just fun, man. It's fun. If you go into it without having your brain addled and poisoned by the internet, you're going to have a fun time. There's no doubt in my mind about it.
This movie will only gain fans over time. Yeah. This will be a major pop culture touchstone film. Like, when you think of the 2020s movies,
Rob Brydon,
the trip movies are awesome.
Fucking Rob, yeah.
Yeah, I think like two decades from now, in the 2040s, 2050s, when you look back at the 20s in film, like, you will think of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely. This will be a movie. This is a cultural, like, touchstone movie.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It really is a fucking shame that there's so much weird negative discourse around a fun movie. Mm-hmm. I get it around something like real, like I get it. I would get it around Oppenheimer. It's a very serious political thriller. But that, this is such a fun movie. I don't know why, whether you're a guy or you can't go in there and just enjoy that shit. But
Everything with the Kins was fucking hilarious. Doing a patriarchy. Yeah. Doing a patriarchy.
the horses thing, like everything, man.
She asked me for the time. He just pulls out five watches.
Respect me out there. Gotta love our soundproof studios,
holy
baby.
Shit, that's the loudest sign I've ever heard in the studio.
Shout out Barstool. Great studio.
So Barbie 90. Yeah. For me, I get to myself liking it more the second time I see it. I'm going to see it again next week. You gave it an 84.
I was telling him beforehand, when I like booked all my slate for this past couple weeks of movies, like Mission Impossible, this, Oppenheimer, and everything, I was asking my girlfriend if she wanted to go to any of them. And then Barbie, she's like, nah, it's not a movie I would like to see. And then, like, now, because everyone's freaking out about it and how good it is, like, she texted me or asked me this morning, she's like, you want to go see Barbie? I was like, fuck no, you go watch it by yourself now, like I had to do.
Nah, I'm
which,
done.
By the way, an uncomfortable experience. And I love going to the movies by myself. Not great. Barbie was a tough one. If you're not a gay man or a man there with a woman in a relationship, that was a rough one to be at alone.
Barbie, I was the only straight man my theater. An experience I haven't had since I saw Don't Worry, Darling opening night.
Yeah, that was a rough one.
Take her to see Insidious, The Red Door. And
yeah, exactly. Like,
here's what you get.
I should do that. Like, you guys punish me with
yeah, we'll go to a movie, all right.
Like, what was it? Medea's Christmas or whatever.
Medea's Christmas. Right. All right. So we liked Barbie.
Yeah.
Now
we loved
Oppenheimer.
It. We loved it.
This one's brought to you by TickPick. Ever actually read a ticket receipt? Service fee, processing fee, convenience fee? Convenient for who? That's an extra $30 a ticket. TickPick doesn't do that. Never has, never will. No fees means the exact same seat, same section, same row. Cost less on TickPick. Fans trust TickPick for all their live events. Check the reviews yourself. So why overpay for the exact same seat? Download the TickPick app and never pay another service fee again. And for new TickPick customers, take $20 off your first order with promo code PMT20 in the TickPick app. Terms apply. That's PMT20 at checkout for $20 off your first order.
Oppenheimer from Christopher Nolan. During World War II, Lieutenant General Leslie Gross, played by Matt Damon, appoints physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer to work on the top-secret Manhattan Project, the building of the atomic bombs. Oppenheimer and a team of scientists spend years developing and designing the atomic bomb. The synopsis is tough to read because it is a movie that is spoiler. I guess not really a spoiler alert, like any Christopher Nolan movie. Very similar to Dunkirk. It's different timelines, kind of converging, though this one, they don't really converge at the end. They kind of just cross paths. A lot of it's based, it's a character study on J. Robert Oppenheimer. A lot of it is based around the building of the bomb, but a lot of it is also based around hearings that happen. One for the security clearance of J. Robert Oppenheimer, and the other one, the hearing for Strauss, played by
Robert Downey Jr. Yeah,
Robert Downey Jr., who's trying to get appointed to, I almost said Eisenhower. I almost said Oppenheimer again. His cabinet. So there's a lot of different.
Oh, that was Eisenhower. Yeah.
There's a lot of different threads and storylines, but it really, if you were to untangle them and lay them out, it starts out with Oppenheimer at Cambridge as a student, as an American student in Cambridge, and ending some years after World War II and the atomic bombs are dropped. Another star-studded cast list. Crazy fucking cast. Cillian Murphy in the lead role. Emily Blunt playing someone in his life. I won't spoil it fully. Matt Damon, Robert Downey Jr., Florence Pugh, Josh Hartnett, Casey Affleck, which I guess I didn't realize.
I forgot about Casey Affleck completely.
When I heard the voice, I'm like, that's not Casey. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Rami Malek, Kenneth Branagh, who's in every fucking...
Oh, yeah, baby.
He's in every Nolan
movie. Niels Bohr, man.
Benny Safdie of the Safdie Brothers. With a great accent work by Benny Safdie.
I would believe it until I'm proven otherwise.
Jason Clarke.
Beast mode Clark.
There's just a lot of guys I didn't expect. By the way, I just forgot we're in this movie.
I remember Clark because he fucked us on that.
That is true. That's right. That's true. Dylan Arnold, Tom Conti, James Darcy, David Dost Malchian, Dane DeHaan, Alden Ehrenreich, Tony Goldwyn, David Crummell. It's been a crazy
Crummell's
role.
Rocked, man.
Yeah, crazy role. Matthew Modine, Jack Quaid, Josh Peck, Alex Wolff. I'm trying to make sure I get everyone. There's one I don't want to say because I actually didn't realize it. And some people said they didn't know that this person was playing the person.
What about Roderick? Mentioned. Have you said Roderick from Roderick Rules?
Yeah, that's right.
I can't remember his name now.
Roderick Rules. Yeah. Movie's doing great at the box office. $180 million. It might be more now. $100 million budget, which is that seems wrong. I don't know how they only made
Blue Beetle cost $120 million.
Like what?
This is where I'm like, they're cooking the book somehow.
This movie looks like it cost $500 million to make. Like it's unreal.
I feel like a lot of it's players playing for vets minimum.
That's what I want. I would love to see like
what how they much George Lopez $90 million to be in Blue Beetle. Maybe
that's great point.
$40 million alone for Batman's a fascist.
Yeah.
What format did you guys see it in?
70.
IMAX 70 millimeter.
IMAX. Did you see IMAX? Okay. Yeah. So we all saw IMAX 70 millimeter, Lincoln Square here in the city.
I do want to see it again in a different format.
I do too. I'm going to make one small note. I am very curious how it sounds outside of IMAX. Mm-hmm. I've seen some people say that the sound with all, this is a Christopher Nolan thing. He loves to blow your fucking eardrums out. I'm curious how it sounds in a not IMAX theater. IMAX sounded perfect, like perfect. But I've seen some people, though one of our coworkers, you know, if you watch this channel, listen to this feed, Chris Klemmer, he said he saw it in regular 70 millimeter and said he had no audio issues. He said it sounded perfect. So I am curious about that.
Yeah.
It was my one thing. I walked out. We saw with our coworkers, John Fido, where we saw last night. We had no issue with the sound.
I kind of wish I had captions on this movie. You know what I mean? This is a movie where I'm gonna love rewatching with captions. But
also one because there's just so many different accents.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
It is tough to understand some people. But that's less about the audio, more about accent work. This movie's unfucking believable, I think. It's the last movie I'm ever gonna see in that. I've seen 500 movies in that theater, maybe more. Been going there for 10 years. That is probably, unless I'm missing, the best movie I've ever seen.
Oh, wait, no, you are missing one. There's an IMAX movie we saw in that theater front row with Robbie Fox. Venom 2.
I told Fights, by the way, I'm like, because so we sat three rows up, yeah. Which I will say, if you go to like that size theater, as long as you're like second row and up, I don't think it really matters where you sit. I think it's doable. The first front row was like dropped down. Actually, our coworker Chris Clemmer was there in the movie, and he was like the front row.
Well, he's also like two dimensional, so it works.
He got up. He got up in the middle of the movie to get a snack, and he'd seen it already. And you see this like just the wiry frame of Chris Clemmer walking in front of Oppenheimer. Also, the guy in front of us texting the entire movie and his shoe, which it wasn't even bright, so it didn't bother me. And he took his fucking shoes off. What the fuck?
Oh, come on, dude.
But the weird. So I actually looked. I was like, man, this guy's texting a lot. And I looked over. I snooped. Whatever, he's looking up the location of the Alamo Draft House in the city. I'm like, what?
He looks like
that right now.
He's like, wait, is that what they named Los Alamos after?
yeah.
There's an Alamo Draft House.
Way. Oh my way! I kind of think he might have been. So
we could probably talk about that before even the movie theater experiences. Barbie was great. Oppenheimer. I had these irony bros next to me that were just fucking chuckling their fucking asses off at the least funny moments. And like they're the only ones laughing. It was
the two dudes next to me would not shut up, and they brought in like a cup of like bad candy, like miniature. It was like mini Crunch bars and like mini Goodyear bars. I was like, why is this the candy you brought?
Yeah.
So my debate is that the best theater movie I've ever seen in that theater? It may land on no because I saw Blade Runner 2049 there. But
I saw it in Chicago. IMAX, not good.
I gotta see it again. But this is the 13th movie I'm ever giving 100 out of 100 for. That is I think is a perfect movie. I'm giving Oppenheimer a 100. I have no issues with it. And if anything, it's like maybe a tiny nitpick, and I just don't. If you listen to the show enough, you know me. Like I'll excuse like a little thing here and there. I have another 100. I have 100 out of 100 that is perfect and has one of the worst scenes in movie history. It's when Charlie's mom sings in the Chocolate Factory. I just don't acknowledge that. But I could fine tooth comb this movie, maybe find like one tiny little thing. Like, did they have to say John F. Kennedy? I'm not going to fucking take a point off for that. No. I think it is perfect. It is mind blowingly good. It is one of the best acted movies I've ever seen. Here's the funny thing about Dune moving. I'm glad my one happy thing if Dune moves is that I want Dune to win Oscars, and I don't want these two. This would be a war at the Oscars, assuming Dune is good. This movie is going to be this might break records for nominations.
I think it's going to do the Succession thing, what Succession just did with the Emmys, where it's just going to load up in the acting categories.
I can't pick who was the best performance. I can't every minute. I'm changing my mind. I just think it's a masterclass in editing. It's his best movie, Christopher Nolan. The sound is unbelievable. All the Trinity stuff, all the building bomb is great. And then the last hour, it's like, you thought that was good? Here's another hour of this unbelievable political thriller.
Yeah.
It is. I don't want to spoil this. I want to talk specifics. It's 100 out of 100. It is like, I was mind blown. I don't know what Fights gave it, but we walked out of the theater and we just laughed. We were like, holy shit. Like, that was unreal. And I'm not even like a Nolan stan. I don't love Interstellar. Like, I'm not like a guy who loves like, take this at face value. Like, I don't love every Nolan movie. He's amazing. But, like, it's not a Nolan thing. I just think what we just saw is like, literally perfect. 100.
Yeah, I think that this movie was one of his most impressive challenges as a director for a lot of reasons, most of which I think being because of just the sort of, like, atmosphere he had to build in it. Because, I mean, if you think of all of his other movies, there's so much he's able to do with – it's not even just sound, but like really visuals. Mm-hmm. Like the landscape is so much more open and for imagination, for all of those things. And this is really not. And when I left this movie, I tweeted like, yeah, I really feel like this was kind of like a really expanded play. And people were very confused by that. And I understand why, but I can explain it. And it's like, this is a Nolan movie that is about the atomic bomb. And the movie at its core is built on these extremely intense conversations in tight mm-hmm. quarters. And almost every atmospheric feeling that you have throughout the movie depends on the actor's ability to convey it to you, which is super impressive. And like, because like, basically we know the stakes of World War II, right? We know that we win. We know that the bomb works. It goes off. We know Hiroshima. We know all this stuff. We know it's the first domino in our near extinction as a species. But for everyone watching, like, we don't know the anxieties that it placed on the people that went through it, because we're really weathered by the generations kind of ahead of us. Like, I'm 30. Like, you're right ahead of me. You're right. I picked right behind me. Like, the Cuban Missile Crisis happened when my dad wasn't even born yet. Like, that's the closest we've come to that extinction level shit. And like, we're that separated from it. Like, we're not scared really of the bomb. Like, I never grew up like scared of the atomic bomb. You know what I mean? Like, my biggest thing in my brain would be like watching the T2 scene, you know?
So, right,
like,
right,
you
know, right.
We didn't grow up really scared of it in that way. So like, and this isn't some big action blockbuster about a nuclear holocaust. So all that fear, which is a huge component of this movie, that fear and anxiety needs to be imprinted on us entirely through dialogue and the actor's delivery of it. And that, I think, was so impressive for Nolan, because that's something he doesn't usually need to do, is to impress everything through dialogue. And I think this is his best written movie. Mm-hmm. I think he's it has some of the best performances he's coaxed out of a million different people, which is crazy. And it just, I think it does such a great job at putting together these little scenes, these tiny little like bit to bit to bit, tiny scenes, two actors, three actors sitting in a room talking and making you feel scared, making you feel anxiety, making you feel like all these different emotions without the usual Nolan crux of being able to do it through something happening behind them or an action scene or a setting or all this shit. It's really just these, how these two actors are delivering mm-hmm. really good dialogue. And I think another just great moment is how this whole movie progresses, right? Like, a whole big part of it is the bomb going off, like you were saying. And then that whole second half, the political thriller, like, it's tough to come back to really get away from that climax of a fucking nuclear bomb going off. But I think that closing 20 minutes, when you get some of that dialogue, Strauss losing, and that line of Alden Ehrenreich saying that maybe there's something way more important. Like, that fucking line is so killer. And then they follow it up with the line of Oppenheimer to Einstein being like, I think we did. Killer. What a fucking stamp on an end of a movie.
It is. That is one of the best endings I've ever seen in a movie. And you know that you get the sense that is how it's going to end. You're going to hear what he says. Well, I guess spoilers here too. So I guess you're going to hear what he says to Einstein.
Yeah.
And you kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm a big dummy, but I kind of thought he did say something about Strauss too. So I was like, I don't know, maybe he did. But then you just, when Ehrenreich delivers that line, you're like, oh, fucking hell, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much bigger than these. And that's like, that's the dread of Oppenheimer, him realizing it's so much bigger than him, but where Strauss doesn't at all.
Yeah.
It's unreal. Yeah. The ending is crazy.
And I think the last thing is just that one of the most impressive parts, I know like all of us have noted this, but the ability of him to get like near career best performances out of 50 people.
Yeah.
And like in lines where it's like you, and like when you think about like ensemble cast and almost anything, like it's really difficult to kind of get like a good level of like kind of like worth their time for each actor. And like every single actor had such a concentrated punch for their screen time. You know what I mean? Like Jason Clarke had a little more time than like our fucking Rami Malek did or whatever. And like very few actors were looking at them and just thinking like, that's that guy. You know what I mean? I was just thinking like, wow, they did a really good job delivering that dialogue in that one moment. Like Cromwell's a great example. Like he was in this, he had like three scenes, all of them awesome. Like,
you know what made incredible. Me? I thought about like you, especially because we review Bohemian on this pod, is when the first two scenes of Malick, he doesn't speak.
I was like, oh no.
He's just a little guy.
I made a mental note. I'm like, man, we're going to roast this motherfucker. And then he comes in and he has one of the most important scenes in the movie. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, exactly. And like, it was just a perfect job of that as a director, which I think is an incredibly difficult thing to do.
Just used perfectly. Rami Malick was just a little guy.
Yeah.
He's just right there.
Wait, what do you give it?
I ended up giving it a 91 out of 100. I think that it is above like an Interstellar, like you were saying, like that. I have it below some of his better stuff. Like Inception, I think, is a better execution of a movie to me. But it's just one of those things where it's really nitpicky. You know what I mean? Like, and I can come down to some things. Like, I'm like you, I'm not going to take the point off of the JFK thing, which was, it was egregious. It was an egregious moment.
It was like a Marvel moment. It only takes you out for a second, but you just kind of go, like, wait, oh. What the fuck was that?
It makes you like groan. It's like, oh, no, come on, man.
I was like, don't say it. And there's, look like John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. Like, fuck. But there's, I think, some other moments where they could have like kind of cut, because I got to watch an 8-hour cut of this movie. You know what I mean? I could lost 8 fucking hours. Like, I left the movie theater and I was like, oh, I could have done way more than that. And I also think it could have been shorter. I also think it could have been.
I was talking to Kirk. Kirk thinks it's his best, dude. He's like, he said the other one he pointed out, which was a little like, oh, God, a little schmaltzy, was the scene of him as an older man when he gets the award.
Yeah.
Like, you could, you probably could have went from Lyndon B. Johnson.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That might have been, you know, you could probably, but he's like, again, that's like, it's like nitpicking if you for some of that stuff.
I think that maybe 3 hours, as much as like it needed at the time, I think this could have been a more consolidated time frame, if that makes sense, and it would have been a more powerful punch. Or maybe just a bigger one. If this is like a Nolan-led miniseries.
I thought there was a period where I was like, this maybe was pitched as a miniseries at one point.
Because it feels almost like, do you remember, like Chernobyl, one of the best miniseries.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking of, Chernobyl.
Not just because of the nuclear elements of it, but just because of like the how, and even there you get a lot more of like physically seeing shit. But like so much of the dread in that is just hearing Jared Harris being like, yeah, if this gets into this river, then 20 million people are going to die.
Yeah.
Like that, so much of that just being conveyed through somebody saying it. Versus like you having to see it. And I think if I could have seen this in like a 10 part miniseries, I would have shit my pants. Like it would have been so goddamn good. And that's not a detractor of what could have been versus what is. What is still amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you give me a series, miniseries versus movie, we're on this podcast. I pick movie every time. I like knowing 2 to 3 hours, I get the story, I'm in and out. And it was almost back to the actors. Did you guys have like whiplash to the first 30 minutes at one point, and then you kind of settled in? Like, because you're kind of just like, holy shit, he's in this. And like, you finally settle in, you're just like, okay, just everyone's in this.
Mm-hmm.
When Josh Hartnett showed up with that hair,
God, like, he was so sexy, dude.
I thought it was Val Kilmer at first, and I was like, no, it's
good Bruce Wayne. So really could be a good Bruce Wayne.
So sexy in that movie. Holy shit, so good. Dude.
So I'm at a 90 out of 100, same as Barbie. Different reasons, though, obviously. One is more of just like, I love it for the pop culture moment it is. This one, I love it for just, I can't believe Nolan has this in him. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of crazy, right? That Nolan has this gear. Like, this was Sorkin-level dialogue in very many, like you said, small rooms, heavy dialogue, going back and forth onto the next scene. Pretty nuts that he can do this. Like, I legitimately just did not think he could. The performances across the board, personal favorites in terms of supporting. Obviously, I think Killian, at this point, you have to lock him in for best actor.
He's hauntingly good.
Mm-hmm. So good. As just a tortured man who also, not only tortured, but prideful. And like, he wants the adulation. Like, he won't give that up.
And they do a good job of showing him as like kind of the coward. You know what I mean? Yes. Where like, he switches his allegiance on shit all the time. I mean,
fucking Truman just fucking makes fun.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah, here, bitch.
Yeah, dude, great. Oh, now
now we said spoilers. I guess I missed it. I had no idea Oldman was playing.
He did
a pretty good job.
Oldman just collecting old historical white men.
Yeah, fucking Churchill and him.
Get him in the fat suit.
What other
he's trying to hit the triple crown. He's going to be
Stalin.
Hitler.
He's going to be Stalin and Hitler now, yeah.
Stalin, Hitler, yeah. He's going to play all of them.
Oh, that was fantastic. Real story, by the way. Truman did actually.
Which the Irony Bros fucking cracked up at, which annoyed me in what would have been a really good scene. What is a really good scene.
Yeah, but the supporting cast, I thought Casey Affleck, fucking
scary.
Holy shit.
Well, he is kind of maybe scary in real life. Yeah, he was scary.
It's true, but he was phenomenal. Dane DeHaan looked like a young Leo.
He did. I'm glad you said that. I was like, man, it looks like he could play like a younger version of Leo in a movie where Leo's the main guy. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Like, so good.
You guys
like,
are going to get tarred and feather for that.
What?
Once this episode comes out, that take. Dane DeHaan could be Leo. Like, I agree with you.
Oh, no, he looks exactly like him.
You're correct. You're going to, I'm just telling you, you're going to get tarred for that one.
Hey, I'm a fan of Valerian, whatever.
I'm a big Chronicle guy.
Rihanna as the space octopus.
I'm a Valerian guy. So I'm ordering a fucking salad right now. Ignore me. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
David Krumholtz, like you said, just great. Nolan dipping back into the 10 things I hate about you. Well, of course. Now we need a Julia Stiles picture. Make a movie about a woman, Chris. Make
Which, by the way, I already saw some of the takes coming out of this movie being like, they didn't do enough of a good job talking about Gene or this. It's like, it's not about them. It's not fucking about them. This is the world where the men are doing everything.
Emily Blunt had one of the biggest
scenes
in the movie.
So
fucking crazy.
I will say where my complaints lie are actually in the writing of the women. It's not so much that I don't think that they get enough screen time. It's like
the screen time they do.
How Nolan portrays an alcoholic, I thought was very comical at points. Like, she's like just holding onto a whiskey bottle the whole movie. Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't think that's a alcoholic. I think she just has a crutch.
Well, that's too much of like showing you what an alcoholic. Yeah.
Yes, we know. It's just like, okay, we get it. She's an alcoholic. And then she does knock that her scene with Jason Clark when she fires back at him. I mean, we got some claps in our theater.
The chemistry there was like between the two of them on screen. I wonder how many takes that it was so fucking snappy. It was really good. It was very I think you said it's there's a lot of Sorkin energy with the writing of this movie.
Yeah, like she goes 16 weeks. Actually, no, 17. Well, 18. You worded your question wrong.
Yeah.
Like that was great. And then the Florence Pugh character, 50% of her screen time just being sex scenes that were somewhat pointless. Am I wrong in that?
A little absurdity in it, yeah.
Yeah, it was just kind of like this movie didn't really
you
need
you saying
this.
A Florence Pugh sex scene is pointless. Who are you?
I think it added to his constant dread. And I did like that I know he's a womanizer. And he made the joke about like the affair later on again, the other affair. I think it worked in that sense. I was surprised though. After the first one, we saw her boobs again. I was like,
I mean, I'm not complaining. How you show.
How loud were you? And how loud was your cheer when you stood up in class?
I was the only one.
By the way, I think I want to very expressly apologize. I think that we actually poisoned people into thinking there was a 15-minute sex scene.
Oh, yes.
We did live.
Someone tweeted out that a girl was sitting next to them at the movie, and the girl was with her mom. And every time a sex scene started to roll, she would just run out and go to the bathroom because I guess she probably thought there was going to be a 15-minute sex scene.
I think between the two even like reasonably viable, then you editorialized it on TikTok. The TikTok definitely went way more. And that one, people were everywhere talking about it.
We had a guy get up behind us to go to the bathroom, by the way, when he walked out of the door to leave the theater with 4 seconds left in the Trinity countdown. This is the most obvious don't leave the movie scene. They're literally counting it down. Like, what are you doing?
What the fuck? Which we haven't talked about that scene yet. Incredible.
It is incredible. Really good.
It is. Them setting off those explosives like in real life, like that made a huge difference. Yeah,
huge, like massive. When they're just practicing like the components and they showed that explosion, like, holy shit, I've never seen that in a
The delay
movie
of the audio.
Yeah. The sound design was
sound design.
The
unreal.
Sound is the scene for me that is like so there are three sound things that I picked up on. One, the moment you realize, and this happens a lot in Nolan movies, it's the one sound you hear the whole movie. He's big on that, like like Inception, the song is just stretched out, and that's you're hearing the song the whole time, you just don't realize it maybe at first. When you realize that the sound of like the dread and things are bad sound is just the feet stomping in the auditorium when they're celebrating the bombs going off. Like, that's a cool moment. That scene where he's giving this speech and it's dead silent and then people are like dying because like the bomb is quote unquote going off in his life and his mind.
Skin flaps on her face.
That was that's Chris Nolan's daughter.
Was that really?
Oh, yep. Really? Mm-hmm. Didn't know that.
Yep.
So that was crazy. And then the Jason Clark scene where the deposition, he's just hammering Oppenheimer back and forth, it's getting louder and louder and louder. That is like masterpiece shit for me. That is just fucking unbelievable.
I also love the and Nolan's always been good at this, like the visualization of what was going on in his brain. Like it would cut to like the atoms colliding into each other and spinning around each other, like the science in his head, like because it's kind of like a callback to that first scene where he's like, algebra's like music. Can you hear the music?
Yeah.
I do love that getting spliced in throughout the first like 2/3 was awesome.
Yeah, that was amazing. If you're a science nerd, you will love this movie, I think.
Yeah, there's definitely things I don't understand.
It's like the Avengers of like you got Niels Bohr in there. Yeah, you got
even Heisenberg
shows up. Get what's his face who invented the I mean we always knew the hydrogen bomb guy was gonna be in there.
That very funny fucking tweet that guy had where he's like some scientist tweeted like, man, I really thought people were gonna watch this movie and want to be scientists, but after watching I don't think that's gonna be the case. What about Robert Oppenheimer was gonna make you think that people would want to be a scientist after that?
Let's jump negative thing. Let's read the reviews of coworkers because that is a thing. Do you talk about the way people wanted the Barbie thinking they get something different. They get like an elevated like something like Oscars.
They wanted like a nuclear holocaust in fucking Oppenheimer.
Here's one review. I saw Oppenheimer. It was too long. I'm only going to say the name of one person because they're a fucking bozo. It was too long. I don't think the story was told particularly well. I don't care about Oppenheimer and the Robert Downey Jr. character at all. Didn't think they set the story up well. It shouldn't have been two separate. It should have been two separate movies. I don't. Again, if you don't like it, that's perfectly fine. Like you guys like it a whole 10 points less than I. Like I totally... Like even like our coworker Big T told me he's like I liked it. He goes because I didn't think it was like greatest thing I ever saw. He's like I did like it though. Like I think that's fine. There are some takes where I'm like I don't even think that's an opinion. Like I think that's just like I think you just didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah.
like what marketing material did you watch anyway?
I was like Chief had a whole blog where he was like man they better and they had a whole blog where it was titled something along the lines of where it was like in Oppenheimer, they better show Oppenheimer losing his security clearance. Like, did you watch a trailer? Like, all you need is the most first trailer of the movie, and you know that.
Oppenheimer was brilliant and interesting, a character study, which we haven't used those two words yet. This is on its, like, it
it's
is
a character study.
Very deep political thriller character study. A character study about a complicated hero. I also think I need to see it again to truly understand it, which that is Clemmer. He did see it yesterday. He said he liked it more the second time. One of the best movies of the century. That was from Kirk. I can't believe Josh Peck was the guy that pushed the button on the practice. wait, by the way, I'll say the name of it. That's Eddie. Our coworker Eddie, that's the most Eddie.
Irony Bros also did Big Laugh when Josh Peck came on screen.
Eddie, if I were to guess one person would use the words practice nuke, it would be Eddie. I can't believe Josh Peck was the guy who pushed the button on the practice nuke. Barbie was pretty good. What you'd expect from a Barbie movie. Oppenheimer, though, whoa, that is a film. Will win 10 Academy Awards minimum. That was Stu Feiner.
That was Stu Feiner.
Stu's probably right. I mean, he's right. That's an astute observation from Stu. Here's the one from Stephen Che, which this, again, I roasted this. I said, like, man, I can't believe The Social Network wasn't about Winklevoss when he's beating the shit out of Zuckerberg. Dude, like, I don't know how you get this take.
Before we get to the Che one, I just want to say I'm happy he watched something that wasn't an NFL film. He doesn't watch movies. Here's, I'm happy he watched
No, movie. But here, I have to tell you, you were wrong on that, because he knows, and him and I have talked about this. He used to be obsessed with going to see every Oscar nominee.
Yeah.
He has seen, he likes Oscar. Like, I was like, what the how do you get duped like this? Like, what did you read? He said, Oppenheimer thoughts, sheep in wolf's clothing. 3-hour movie with the last 75 minutes being basically C-SPAN with two courtroom cases. Would have been way better if just 2 hours. Did anyone think not? Wait, what?
The last point is incredible.
Did anyone else think not get two trailers? What are you supposed to say on that?
I think he said, like, they didn't get enough trailers. Yeah. Like, he only got two trailers before the movie.
Oh, before the movie?
Yeah.
That's a detriment to the movie. Oh,
Chief didn't love it. And, like, I don't have any problem with Chief's
review. Of course.
He didn't love it. Like, that's perfectly fine. But then, like, Che replied that. He's like, 100% correct take. And I'm like, motherfucker, Stephen Che. I hate getting mad, because we've always been pretty good about that. We've had moments where we kind of joke about it. I don't care if you don't like it. Like, that's perfectly understandable. If you want to debate me on the movie, I will. But Chase is so fucking crazy. And it's just like, not, and his biggest downfall was he had the tweet where he used the word action.
Yeah.
He's like, not enough action. I'm like, what the fuck did you think you were going to watch?
Don't forget, this guy used to chew windowsills and eat lead paint. Just keep this in mind.
They only dropped two bombs, by the way, just a heads up. They only ever dropped it twice. So, like, I don't know how many bombs they're going to drop during this movie. But my big thing, and I mean this actually very seriously, not even like the joke of Chase's comments. The last hour of that movie is as intense of anything as I've
seen. It's my favorite part.
In an action movie.
It's my favorite part. The courtroom stuff, the stuff with Strauss and Oppenheimer, RDK I found crushed, by far man. The best part
Probably
of a very good movie.
Dropping his nuts when he comes in. He starts like that. That's my thing. It's like, maybe you wanted more action. Maybe you wanted to see the bombs get dropped, which, by the way, would have, I think, ruined the movie.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Not the would have been the right, but horrible movie.
Tasteless. Horrible. It would have been tasteless.
Yeah. So, like, that's not the point. Like, the whole point is the dread and, like, the regret and all that. Anyway, so if you had maybe done that or shown parts of the war or shown other action stuff and that, I don't think you could have made it any more intense than it was, because what do you want in action for? You want action for cool fights, right? But you're not going to get that with this. You're not going to go to the battlefield.
Yeah.
War's over anyway after the bombs drop. So, like, you're looking for action that gives you, like, an intensity. I don't know how you make that last hour more intense. I really, like, you can't. Like, so that's where, like, that I'm like, what the fuck am I reading? KFC actually texted me. He's like, don't fall for it. He goes, that's not a real opinion.
Yeah.
Don't fall for Che. And I did. I fell for Che like an idiot.
Dude, sometimes Che just will throw something like that out in the window. It just makes no sense. You've heard how he wipes, right?
I know. Yeah.
How he wipes his ass. It is. You can't be trusted.
But he's seen, that's the thing. It's like, you've seen dramas. You used to watch all the Oscar movies in the 2010s.
If you don't figure out that the movie is going to be like a character study drama within the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, right?
Like, I don't know.
What a piece of shit. Almost kills his teacher, by the way.
And the action's just like not part.
I saw The Imitation Game. I didn't. What the fuck? Nothing on the war front.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, it's not the point. And like, it would have ruined what this movie was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not about the bomb. It's about the people who made
it. Again, I love it. Like, I think some people may want like a more straightforward, because again, it's a classic Nolan
documentary.
It's a Nolan. It's non-linear, linear storytelling. It's non-linear in the way they show the Flash. I think the black and white, I think the way the story is put together on screen and edited is fucking unbelievable. Like, I think it is so perfect. And it leads to, like, what you said. I think you get to a point where you realize that it's probably either going to end or the importance of what the Einstein thing happens. And because there's so much back and forth with politics and you're wrapped up in this world of Jason Clark's deposition and Strauss talking about just getting the job and just doing what needs to be done to get him his job. And they talk about Oppenheimer and like, he's like, fuck him. He just wants to be the guy, the father of the bomb. Yep. He embraced it.
Yeah.
And so you do think maybe it's like, what did he say? Did he say like Strauss just like farted in his office or something? Yeah. What did he say? And then it turns out what he said is like, bigger than him, bigger than Einstein. It's like the world has moved on. Like
it's starting a chain reaction.
It's such a dropping of the mic where it's nuts.
It's such a cool transition, I think, too. Like if you wanted to say that this movie was split into two halves, right? Like the atom.
Kenchuk gets science. That's cool.
Think about the moment after the bomb test when they give the two bombs to the dudes and they're trying to talk to the guys how to do it. Yeah. It's like, no, we'll take it from here. And like that moment on turns into something totally different. Thank you, Barstool Office, for this fucking siren proof office. But just everything beyond that moment when you kind of see how all of the moral objections that Oppenheimer has, it's just kind of like him being a coward. You know what I mean? Like, him not being able to take a stand one way or the other, one side of him wanting to be the father of the bomb, wanting to just finish this project that they've worked so hard on because in the name of whatever you want to call it, I guess science. But like, and then the other part of him just wanting to not be known as the guy that nearly starts like the end of mankind. And like that part of it, I think is so well done. And the part of it where like some people, and I think Che or other people had mentioned this, like, oh, like, why do I care about it? Like his security clearance, like that's not it. Like the whole point is after the bomb, he's the biggest mind in the world. And that security clearance thing is just a catalyst to him being discredited.
Right. It represents
his reputation.
That's where like that type of the critique of the movie where it's like, I want to bite my tongue. It's like, whatever. I love that. I gave it a fucking 100. Like I should just like it myself. But it's like, that's not the point. And it's not even, it's not like it's fucking Tenet either, by the way. It's not like we're like, remember, I always joke, I accidentally understood Tenet.
Yeah. I've tried so many times. I still don't get it. I've watched so many YouTube breakdowns.
I get not saying like, that's like, this is not really, yes, it's not told very in a linear way, but it is very straightforward. Like, it's pretty clearly a symbol for his credit. Like, it's not just it's not like Miracle where they beat the Russians. I always thought of Miracle just because they played Dream On in that Gareth Edwards trailer before the movie. But like, it's just like you said, it's a cast, it's a representation of. It's like, I don't, again, that
it represents his reputation. And like the fact that like when they make a very big point of impressing it on you that like after the bomb is made, he is the number one guy in science in the world. Einstein dead and gone, basically, like for all intents and purposes, like he is the guy. And then Strauss makes a very big effort to discredit him as the guy.
It's Amadeus. That's what I said in my. It is Amadeus, and I actually saw once I looked it up. Christopher Nolan explicitly said that he structured their relationship as Amadeus and Mozart, which I loved. I mean, that was just great. I love that back third. I can't believe people don't like it.
It is. It's like and it makes sense because you guys like, we joked about it last night when I said it. I told you I had this thought. It's like I'm a big Sorkin fan. It's very Sorkin-y.
Dialogue heavy. I mean, the dialogue sets everything
up. It's a political thriller. It's the Robin. I can't pick a favorite scene. Like, I think the best scene is probably the Jason Clark scene. I think that is like you could argue though that the quiet scene in the schoolhouse or on like in the
yeah, I think that was the best when he announces and he comes to. It's right after the bomb and he comes to the realization. What have I done? Well, everyone's cheering for him, and I love the pan to Jack Quaid's face, and he kind of also knows. What did we do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jack Wade also phenomenal. Like, couple so lines, many people just come in and crush it.
And that's another thing too. Like, I remember
Damon Great.
After release, I went like looked up what half the people look like. Like, they physically look so much like
Jack
these
Wade's character.
Looks exactly like
it's
him.
Jack Quaid.
And like beyond the Murphy ones, like all these side dudes, like they look exactly like their counterparts. It's crazy.
Damon really is like Mr. Fundamental of Hollywood. Like Damon is so like
I love that.
Like Damon,
he's the Albert Pujols.
He's Tim Duncan. Like he came in and he had the tough role being one of the few like funnier characters. The second he's in, he's funny, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like when he walks into Cal Burke is hilarious. And every like little moment, and even like his more heartfelt moment where he says, like, no, I would not clear him. He's like, but I wouldn't clear any of these fucking guys.
Exactly.
Like, he was great. It was unreal. I don't. We talk about the Dune thing. Like, my only like really positive about Dune being delayed is like, I don't want these two movies to compete at the same off. Like, if Dune is good, Dune may not be good. I hope it is. I hope for everything in my life that Dune is great. But assuming Dune is good, as people expect it to be, like, these two movies, like, duking out the Oscars could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, like, Oppenheimer is going to get, I mean, the Ludwig Göransson's score
sound
is fucking incredible.
Dude, is
the score is.
I saw a very funny tweet of, like, Göransson and Hans Zimmer, like, walking past each other in the hallway.
The Göransson score, I loved how they... It was almost like a horror score.
Yeah.
Like, I love the way they did that. Like, it just built that, like you were talking about earlier, it just built that dread throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. God, the end movie is so good. But yeah, the sound, music, cinematography,
screenplay,
editing, that's minus 5 million to win editing, by the way.
Oh.
Best editing at the Oscars.
He's got the best. He has to have one of the best editors. I can't remember her name, but she is phenomenal. Because his movies are not, I can't imagine, easy to edit. Like, they're just ridiculous.
Like, his like storyboard, like of like timeline of events, and trying to be like, okay, yes. Now I'm gonna piece this.
Yeah, I want these six things right here.
Even though
what do you mean? There's a different scene.
Yeah, no. Dude, he's in, I think, adapted screenplay alone. Like, I would put a lot of money on him winning that
because
it was unbelievably well done.
Definitely front runner for picture right now is my guess. The acting category is going to be a zoo.
I would imagine, obviously, Killian in best actor category. I would assume they get two in best supporting.
Yeah.
I don't know which two at this point. I have no clue which two they'll put in there.
You know what's weird is I think that they will give ones where they don't maybe necessarily deserve it.
I think one will be RDJ for sure.
RDJ deserves it.
RDJ was unbelievable.
Yeah. I could see them pushing Matt Damon as a cool storyline where he gets nominated for Air and he gets nominated in both Best Actor
Emily
and Supporting.
Blunt will definitely get Supporting Actress.
And I don't think she should get Best Supporting.
You don't think?
No.
I don't think. Like, that was, she had one good scene.
Yeah.
I think she's not worthy.
But that's a class. I know you're always a guy, you don't always love when it's like a small scene that gets you the big nom.
Exactly. Like, even like, I know people bitched when fucking Mahershala Ali won in Moonlight. Like, he had way more to do with Moonlight than Emily Blunt had to do with Oppenheimer. And like, it's not to be like, oh, Emily Blunt's scene sunk, she was terrible. Like, no, she was good in every scene she was in, but I guarantee you we're going to see better supporting actress scenes.
Okay, so in terms of small scenes,
yeah.
Who, like, in terms of like Mahershala Ali's the movie, I could, like, I'm not saying they'll get it. Rami Malek, I could see getting like a
just
push.
Getting one, yeah.
Because it is such a pivotal
not
scene.
Not ones that even should get them, just people that will get them.
I also thought, by the way, I thought Aaron Reich was great.
Aaron Reich was dude.
So good.
Not even a named character.
Yeah.
Just like Senate aide. He was incredible.
Jennifer, is it Lame or, I don't, isn't it, is it Lame?
Lame.
That's the editor.
Okay, yeah. She's done like pretty much all of his movies, right?
She's done. So here's her work. Yeah. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Reservation Road, Lovely Bones, Paper Towns, funny enough.
Yeah. There we go.
Manchester by the Sea. No, she's done like kind of a bunch of random things here and there. Remember Meyerowitz Stories? That was a fun movie. She's done a lot of Noah Baumbach. Midsummer, Hereditary, Marriage Story, Tenet, which had to be impossible to edit.
I can't imagine.
Judas the Black Messiah. Ooh, damn. Blonde. No, she was additional editor on Blonde.
Okay,
so that
okay.
Clean up act. Oof. And then editing this movie had to have been, because it is, because Dunkirk is like this, right? But Dunkirk was very... It was like bigger blocks of scenes where this was so many things spliced in.
Very,
and
it all
peppered. Fit perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So just going down the list, Murphy, yes. Blunt, I think, will get it. I think Damon will get nominated. I think Downey Jr. will get nominated. Pugh, I don't know. I think they really like her, but like, I don't know. I don't think she
gets it. It's for Princess Irulan.
Yeah. Josh Hartnett.
Maybe. He was great, but he was so early in the movie, I think people forget about him by the end.
But he had good scenes post that, too. Like, the scene where, like, he's trying to, like, convince Oppenheimer to, like, stop doing all the socialist shit.
Yes.
Like, that scene is really good. Like, his, like, desperation and not want his friend to get, like, arrested. Rami Malek, me. Casey Affleck, no. Benny Safdie, maybe.
Safdie, I could see. He is pretty fucking good.
I love this turn Safdie's taking in his career where he's like, I'm just going to be a character actor. And he's really fucking good at that.
That accent's great.
Yeah. Dan DeHaan, no. Iron Mike, maybe. Krummelt, no. But he was
really good.
Excellent. Who was the Josh? No, like all the other ones after.
Take off the outfit.
No.
Yeah. I could. Malik, I think, of the small ones I could see because it's such a pivotal scene in the movie.
Watch him fucking give it to Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman. That would be really.
Get that crybaby out of here.
You bitch boy.
Blood on your hands.
That is so, that is a great fucking, man, that really is.
The bomb ain't about you, son.
I dropped that shit.
I get the credit for that, bad boy.
Yeah, unbelievable. I'm excited to see it again. We'll see. Maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment, but I walked home from it. I'm like, God damn. I'm like, I don't have any issue with that movie. Mm-hmm. Very up my alley, but also a good example of like, man, there's some bad biopics out there.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, yeah. But also a good example of like, you can really do something. Now, I'm not saying everyone can. Christopher Nolan is a unicorn.
One of one, man.
Right. But you can definitely make biopics that aren't just fucking made for TV, A to Z storytelling schlock. You can make something inventive and something different and something creative. And it's just a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Like another one that Ryan Mullick won a bunch of awards for.
Yes, exactly. Ironically enough.
I know. I posted about the supporting actors and someone was like, "What, you didn't think Rami Malek was better in Bohemian Rhapsody?" And I was like, nope.
No.
Nope.
Yeah, old takes exposed though, because when he dropped that clipboard and said nothing, I'm like, oh man, we're going to make fun of this fucking loser.
Yeah.
And I don't hate Rami Malek, but like, this man has no lines. What a bozo.
He just showed up and I was like, there's Rami Malek.
Rami Malek is a legitimately great actor.
Yes,
I know this from watching four seasons of Mr. Robot. He's fucking phenomenal. He's been used incorrectly in every movie he's been in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Except for this one where they're like, he's just going to be a little guy. He's going to be a little tiny guy in the background. And then he's going to step up like a mouse and just take him down.
Walking alongside old Leo Slizzard in Chicago. Great name. That was, I mean, everything about it was, yeah, I was so scared. I was just so fucking frightened that he was going to be like just the guy there. I was going to be like, oh yeah, Ryan Mullock was there. Man, that scene. That scene was so good.
Well, there's a bit with Dane DeHaan too. I'm like, is he going to fucking talk?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he did talk. He talked quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
the breakdown of that conspiracy, by the way, too, that scene sequence is really well done. Just to decide to end it on that note. When they break down how Strauss engineered
David DeMasian.
That's such a really quick scene. Yeah.
A really classic whip pan to see. Yeah. Well, it wasn't a full whip.
It
moved. Yeah. It's like, he's been there the whole time.
Yep.
Him reading his letter was great, too. Exactly. It was a real, you're like, man, this motherfucker just going
to. Just a hater.
Catch a break. Yeah.
This guy's got haters.
He was a generational hater of Strauss.
Actually, who played his lawyer?
Not
Oppenheimer's lawyer.
Oh,
he was really good.
He was
really good at being like, Jesus, this is
Garrison like, is making
in over his head.
He's got the one little yellow notepad. Yeah. He's like, what the fuck?
Macon Blair.
Okay, name. Yeah, he was. Really I thought good. He was really good in that role too. Yeah.
Southern ass name, Macon Blair.
90 from Gooch, 91 from Kendrick, 100 from me. 13th movie I ever rated 100.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to change based on viewings. I can usually rattle them off the top of my head, but that would be because I recently moved Social Network to 100. With that, Empire Strikes Back, Goodfellas, Seven Samurai, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Godfather, Singing in the Rain, Back to the Future, Blade Runner 2049, Willy Wonka, All the President's Men. Which the political thriller?
There's a Skarsgård in this movie.
Yeah, Gustav from Vikings,
and then Social Network and Oppenheimer. 100. That's it. What's next week? I think it's like nothing, right?
Haunted Mansion. Fuck Haunted Mansion. They Clone Tyrone. I heard it's good.
They Clone Tyrone was good. Yeah, really liked it.
Yeah, we'll do both.
It was like, you guys ever watch Undercover Brother?
No, but I know exactly what we're talking about.
With Eddie Griffin, it's a really funny movie. It's like Undercover Brother, except like higher quality.
But it's Undercover Brother because. Because John Boyega is British.
Brother. I thought you said brother.
Bruv.
We'll still do Haunted Mansion. It's a Disney movie, and I kind of think it's going to be bad, and I kind of want to.
Yeah.
But we'll do They Clone Tyrone. That is, it's on Netflix,
what the
right?
Fuck, Garrison? This guy was skinny? Garrison, this guy's skinny as a fucking really? Twig. Yeah, yeah. Goddamn, sorry. But yeah, They Clone Tyrone, really good. You guys will like it. Netflix.
That's it. Biggest movie release week in many, many years.
Probably
successful.
Very successful, yeah. There could have been a lot of things that went wrong. It was amazing.
I can't wait for Hollywood to try to replicate this and do so miserably.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're going to try to engineer it.
Oh, here's the movie about...
Here's Kang Dynasty and whatever.
This will never be able to be recreated.
Not artificially. Organically, maybe. Never artificially again.
The movie about the Iraq War and My Little Pony.
Maybe something like that, yeah. They will never be able to replicate it. Which, by the way, that was and one of the greatest things about this whole experience was just like a great feeling of movies being back while you were there in the theater. Because like not only the both theaters packed to the fucking gills, but like everybody was just having so much like fun being yeah. part of the experience. And like, that's something that I get. It's like heartwarming as movie people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really, it was just a lovely, lovely weekend.
So I'm going to go back and see him again. That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Gooch, I'm Jeff Salillo. We'll talk to you next time.
Sweet.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.